There have long been two faces of U.S. foreign policy. Since the United States became a great global power after World War II, U.S. foreign policy has veered between the visionary cooperation of Kennedy's Partial Test Ban Treaty and the reckless unilateralism of the CIA-sponsored invasion of Cuba that preceded it. Great acts of U.S. cooperative leadership include the establishment of the UN, the IMF, and World Bank, the promotion of an open global trading system, the Marshall Plan to fund European reconstruction, the eradication of smallpox, the promotion of nuclear arms control, and the elimination of ozone-depleting chemicals. Notorious acts of U.S. unilateralism include the CIA-led overthrows of several governments, Iran, Guyana, Guatemala, South Vietnam, Chile, the assassinations of countless foreign officials, and several disastrous unilateral acts of war in Central America, Vietnam, Cambodia, Laos, and Iraq. The United States has thrown elections through secret CIA financing, put foreign leaders on CIA payrolls, and supported violent leaders who then came back to haunt the United States in a notorious boomerang or blowback effect, including Saddam Hussein and Osama bin Laden, both once on the CIA payroll. As a recent and shocking history of the CIA terms it, militant and covert unilateralism is a legacy of ashes. The Bush administration's unilateralism, therefore, has deep roots in one facet of American foreign policy, but its crudeness and violence are unprecedented. Like the earlier excesses during the Cold War era, the Bush administration excesses are rooted in a perverse belief system in which American goodness can and must be defended against foreign evil by violent, covert, and dishonest means. Both the Cold War and today's war against Islamic fundamentalism are born of a messianism that sees the world in black and white and lacks the basic insight that all parts of the world, including the Islamic world, inhabit the same planet and breathe the same air. Indeed, as a deeply ecologically stressed part of the world, the Islamic drylands of the Sahel of Africa, just south of the Sahara, the Middle East, and Central Asia, have a greater stake in international cooperation on the environmental challenges and extreme poverty than just about any other part of the world. Yet the United States has completely failed to recognize our common links with these regions, and instead have carried on an utterly destructive war on peoples and societies that we barely understand. Modest investments to save the world. A group of global public investments, undertaken by the nations of the world, is needed in order to avert the greatest risks facing the world. The costs of these investments, to fight climate change, loss of biodiversity, rapid population growth, and extreme poverty, will not be large, especially if the costs are shared equitably among the world's nations. The challenge lies not so much in the heroic efforts needed to avert catastrophe, but in the current difficulty of getting the world to agree on even modest efforts. We don't need to break the bank. We only need common goodwill. As we will discuss, the conversion of our global energy system, which now threatens devastating climate change, into a sustainable energy system in which climate change is brought under control, would likely cost well under 1% of annual world income. The adoption of a bold population policy to slow the runaway population growth in the poorest countries would cost less than 0.1% of the annual income of rich countries. And the end of extreme poverty, for example, would require less than 1% per year of the income of the rich world to finance the crucial investments in the poorest countries needed to extricate them from the poverty trap. And even that modest transfer to the poor would be temporary, perhaps lasting only until 2025. Yet despite the huge imbalance between the modest costs of action and huge consequences of inaction, the world still remains paralyzed. The types of steps needed to avert the worst outcomes are clear to many specialists, though not to the public. The main problem, I shall suggest time and again, is not the absence of reasonable and low-cost solutions, but the difficulty of implementing global cooperation to put those solutions in place. Our Millennium Promises. The greatest economic and political challenges of our time, the sustainability of the environment, the stabilization of the world's population, and the end of extreme poverty, have certainly not escaped worldwide notice. In the past 20 years, world leaders on occasion have groped for ways to cope with these challenges. In fact, they've achieved some important successes, and with considerable public support. A framework of shared global commitments has actually been adopted that can provide a foothold for a sustainable future. The challenge is to turn those fragile and as yet unfulfilled global commitments into real solutions. The new global scaffolding emerged during the decade 1992 through 2002, spurred in part by the awe-inspiring arrival of the new millennium. The Rio Earth Summit in 1992 brought us three crucial environmental treaties. The first was the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, UNFCCC, to address the newly recognized and harrowing threats of man-made climate change. The second was the Convention on Biological Diversity, CBD, to address the growing evidence of massive and planet-wide species extinction at the hands of human activity. The third was the United Nations Convention to Combat Desertification, UNCCD, to put the world's policy focus on the dry lands, areas such as Darfur, Sudan, and Somalia, which face hardships in food production and human health unrivaled in other ecological settings.